Hi, everybody. Welcome to today's live webinar, How to Navigate the Online Sales Tax Legislation Waters, hosted by Retail Online Integration Magazine and sponsored by Avalara. My name is Melissa Campanelli, and I'm Editor-in-Chief of Retail Online Integration, and I'm pleased to welcome you to today's event. Many e-commerce businesses have had to worry about collecting sales tax in states where they didn't have a physical presence. But things could rapidly change if one of two proposals moving through Congress right now is enacted. The proposals, the Marketplace Equity Act and the Marketplace Fairness Act, would require online retailers to collect sales tax in many states. Proponents, such as states, who argue that the $20 billion in sales taxes go uncollected by out-of-state online merchants every year, and local retailers, who see people come into their stores to check out a product but buy it tax-free online instead, are becoming more vocal and are pushing for one of these proposals to pass this year. To understand this complicated environment better, join us today for a lively and educational webinar presented by Sylvia Dion, a leading online sales tax expert and the founder-owner of Sylvia F. Dion CPA State and Local Tax Consulting, and Webb Stevens, Senior Director of Business and Corporate Development at Avalara, who will discuss the following: the status of federal online sales tax legislation, state Amazon laws and what they mean to you, online sales tax next steps and best practices. Before we get started, let me point out a few quick tips about how to make the most of today's live webinar. First, if you have any technical difficulties, troubleshoot by clicking on the help widget at the bottom of the console marked with a question mark, or let us know via the Q&A box. You can also use the Q&A box to submit your questions to today's panelists. We'll be addressing select questions at the end of the hour, but you can send them in at any time. And please make sure you turn off any pop-up blockers on your computer so that you can use all of the widgets and bells and whistles on this console. And speaking of bells and whistles, please click on the Tips for Attendees widget below to learn what all of the widgets on this console do and how you can customize your experience today. Here today to discuss online sales tax legislation, let me introduce you to Sylvia Dion. Take it away, Sylvia.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Melissa, and thank you for having me today. This is indeed a hot topic. There is so much going on in the area of forcing online retailers to collect sales tax, both by the states and by the federal government. And I'll tell you what, there is a lot going on here. There's a lot of information we're going to cover today, and I'm very excited to be speaking about it. Just very quickly, just to give participants an idea of some of the things we're going to cover in the next 40 minutes or so, is I'm going to start off with just a very quick overview of what sales tax nexus is, talk about some of the internet sales tax myths and misperceptions that you see floating around out there, talk about why it really is that online retailers like Amazon and Overstock, and maybe many of you, are not legally required to collect sales tax currently. Talk a little bit about state Amazon laws. Yes, we're certainly going to focus on the federal legislation today, but I thought it was very important to at least touch on state Amazon laws. Everybody's heard that term before. What is an Amazon law, and what do retailers, online retailers, really need to know about state Amazon laws? So very quickly, we're also going to talk about extensively the three federal online proposals. Excuse me, Melissa, my screen seems to have left me. Okay, I apologize for that. For some reason, the screen has just left me, but I'm fine now. We're also going to talk about the federal proposals extensively. There's three of them that are under consideration currently. Just one second. I'm so sorry, folks. Okay, and we're going to talk about specifically two of them that are very serious contenders to pass this current year. And we're also going to have a quick overview of a comparison between state Amazon laws and the federal internet sales tax proposals. And then we're just going to have a final recap and talk about some key points. So 30-second overview. I said we're going to talk about sales tax. Many of you already know what sales tax is. You're probably collecting it. You're probably remitting it. So you probably already know what sales tax is. But just a very quick overview, there's 45 states plus the District of Columbia that imposes state sales tax. A sales tax is a trustee tax. It's a tax that's collected on behalf of the state and local governments. One of the worst things a business can do is collect sales tax and not remit it to the federal government, state government, excuse me, to which it relates. An obvious physical presence, you probably heard this before, if you've got people in a state, if you've got a storefront in a state, a corporate office in a state, that will require you to register with that particular state and start collecting that state sales tax. But wait a minute, it's not just an obvious physical presence that creates what we call nexus, which creates a connection that requires retailers to register with a particular state. There's many other activities, such as attending trade shows, using marketing affiliates. We're going to talk about that in just a minute. Hiring contractors, non-employees. There's a lot of things that a company, a retailer, may be doing in another state that also requires them to register and collect sales tax. Again, if you have an obvious physical presence in a state, you almost always have to register with that state to start collecting the state and local taxes, but there's many less obvious activities that also create what we call nexus, which is really just a connection to that particular state that requires you to register and collect sales tax. All right, I think it's time for a polling question. We've got a polling question here, folks, before we continue. There are a lot of myths and misperceptions floating around out there about sales made over the Internet. First question, which are some of the ones that you may have heard? Some of the choices we have, sales made over the Internet are tax-free. Sales tax isn't charged on Internet sales because of something called the Internet Tax Freedom Act or some other type of similar federal law. And at some point in the past, the federal government said, gee, you know, we've got to give the Internet retailer some type of special treatment, some type of special coddling. Or perhaps you've heard all of these in the past at some point. Okay, we're just going to sit here for a few minutes and wait for the results to come in, a few seconds, should I say. Okay, and here we go. Audience says that they have heard many of these misperceptions before. The overwhelming majority says, yes, I have heard at least two of these myths, plus maybe even more. Well, you guess what? You guys are not alone, because these misperceptions are floating around all over the place. Let's talk about the first one, because I see this all the time. I see articles that talk about one of the reasons why sales made over the Internet are not subject to taxes because of the Internet Tax Freedom Act of 1998. I see this all the time. The Internet Tax Freedom Act has nothing to do with Internet sales not being subject to sales tax. The Internet Tax Freedom Act is a federal act that was put in place to really kind of promote, preserve the commercial, educational, and informational potential of the Internet, and it prohibits federal and state governments from imposing a tax on Internet access. They can't tax email, for example, but it is not the reason why sales made over the Internet are not subject to sales tax. Oh, boy, here's a good one. This is a very common one. I am sure you hear this all the time. You may have even made the statement. See this little woman here? She just went shopping online. She's very happy, okay? She thinks that she did not that she got her purchase tax-free. I'll just buy it on the Internet and save on sales tax. That is a huge misperception. If you make a purchase over the Internet, and you live in a state which imposes a sales tax, and the merchant does not charge you sales tax, guess what? You still owe that tax to the state, and it's called the use tax. A lot of people, you know, either don't know that, figure, hey, you know, I'm not going to get caught if I don't pay my use tax to the government. But it's a huge misperception. No, state sales made over the Internet are subject to tax, even if the retailer does not collect those tax. Here's the third one. I said a minute ago that, you know, you hear these statements like, oh, the federal government said, let's coddle Internet retailers. Let's give them some type of special advantage. Let's do something special for them. There's no real special coddling or special exemption. There's a legal reason why many retailers who make sales over the internet are not required to collect sales tax, and those retailers are operating within the letter of the law, and it's got nothing to do with the federal government saying, hey, let's do something really special for them. Well, why is the reason? Now, there is a key Supreme Court decision, and I'm going to try not to get too legalistic here, but it is important because you will see this decision quoted many, many times. It's called the Quill decision. And, essentially, the reason why online retailers are not required to collect sales tax in a lot of states is because of this particular decision. See, it's the U.S. Constitution really prohibits states from unfairly burdening interstate commerce. And so essentially what happened is that when the founders of our, wonderful government here, created the Constitution, it's not like they really defined every specific term. And so what has happened is over time, the courts have had to come forward and say, well, what does this mean? What does this Constitution really mean? And the Quill decision is really the landmark decision that has defined what is meant by substantial nexus. And so just to give you a little bit of a background, Quill was a Delaware-based corporation that sold office equipment to customers in North Dakota. And Quill did not charge sales tax on those sales. And the North Dakota government said, hey, wait a minute, Quill, you have a presence in our state. You have a connection. You have nexus. And Quill did actually do some stuff in the state. They had this inventory control software. Sometimes they had their inventory in the state, and they kept it in there sort of on consignment. So they were doing some things in the state. And so the North Dakota government said, hey, you should have been collecting sales tax, so we're going to assess you the use tax. Well, the case went through the state courts, made its way all the way up to the U.S. Supreme Court, and one of the most significant things that came out of this, there are two significant things that came out of this particular case. The first is that basically the Supreme Court said that when a company participates in interstate commerce within the borders of a state, that company must have substantial nexus. The court said substantial nexus is defined as a physical presence, i.e., office, employees, property in the state. A state basically cannot impose its taxing burden on an out-of-state company unless that company has substantial nexus to their state. So the key thing that Quill did was it defined what is meant by substantial nexus. The other thing that Quill said was that Congress has the power to change the law. This is the law. This is the way we're going to interpret it. But Congress has the power to change the law. Guess what? Quill was decided in 1992. We're now 2012. 20 years later, Quill is still the letter of the law. It still stands. And that is the real reason why many online retailers are not required to collect sales tax in states in which they do not have substantial nexus. So what's the problem? I said a minute ago, I showed you the little lady who made the purchase and said, hey, I'm a happy camper, I'm not going to have to pay sales tax on this purchase. And I said, well, she didn't really make a tax-free purchase. She owes the use tax. Here's the problem. A significant percentage of use tax goes uncollected. It's in the billions. And I've seen different figures floating around out there. But at the end of the day, there is a significant amount of use tax that is not remitted to the state and local government. So people, first of all, like I said, they're either under the impression that the sales are tax-free or they don't care. They say, I'm not going to pay the use tax, and it just doesn't make its way to the state and local governments. So what's the solution? What's happened here, okay? States have said, wait a minute, okay, the U.S. Supreme Court has refused to hear another case that would change Quill, even though technology has changed, e-commerce has changed, the way we do business has changed. U.S. Supreme Court has refused to hear another case that would overturn Quill. And so what did states say? States said, hey, we need to take action into our hands. There's too much revenue that's really just slipping through the cracks. And states knowing that they basically have to meet the requirement of substantial nexus, i.e. a physical presence in the state, have essentially said, we're going to redefine, we're going to look at activities in the state, we're going to redefine what is meant by a physical presence so that we can still be in compliance with this Quill requirement. So what's happened? is we've had these laws that have been created in numerous states. They go by the name of Amazon, nicknamed after their largest target, okay, Amazon.com. And, you know, many Amazon laws, now Amazon laws are evolving and they're taking on different forms, but some of the initial Amazon laws that you saw out there dealt with marketing affiliates sitting in a particular state, having a contract with an out-of-state retailer and posting a web link or a banner or a widget on their website where if a customer visited the website of that particular marketing affiliate's website, clicked on the link, ended up at Amazon.com and made a sale, states were basically starting to take the position with these Amazon laws that that web link creates a physical presence. So as far-fetched as it sounds, I mean, this is one of the premises that the state Amazon laws are based on. It's like if you have a web link in a state, you're a compensated marketing affiliate who owns this website with a web link on your website, you are a physical presence for that state. And that's one of the reasons why Amazon laws are sometimes referred to as click-through, web linking, and sometimes presumptive nexus law, because they create a presumption that there is a connection, a nexus to that particular state. Another thing to keep in mind when it comes to state Amazon laws, many people think that it's all about these kind of web linking, click-through nexus type of laws, but recently in particular, many states are getting much more aggressive, and they're saying, well, we don't just want to focus on these kind of web links and in-state presence of marketing affiliates. Let's look at other things, too. Let's look at companies that maybe have a what we call a related company, a parent corporation, a subsidiary, a brother-sister corporation in a state. And let's say that related company is doing something in that particular state. They've got a warehouse there. They're servicing some of the product that is sold by the out-of-state retailer. States are now taking the position that that those related companies, even though that related company may not be the retailer itself, those related companies give nexus or a sufficient connection to those out-of-state retailers. Another thing that states are starting to do is saying, wait a minute, okay, we recognize that, okay, there's not really a physical presence in our state, but let's make things really difficult for these out-of-state retailers. Let's make them go through a couple of hurdles and basically make life a little bit more difficult for them with these what we call notification and reporting statutes. You know, some of these say, well, okay, maybe the retailer does not have a sufficient connection to our state, but let's make them, report to the customer that they owe a use tax. Send us a report at the end of the year that all of these customers have made purchases. Let's penalize them if they don't give us this report. So I guess what my point is here is that Amazon laws, you're going to hear that term a lot. You hear that term a lot. More and more states are enacting them. More and more states are proposing them. They're not all about web linking and click-through nexus, that many of them are now taking on a more comprehensive, I guess, form. A couple of things I just want to touch on quickly is big news this month, and I thought it was really pertinent to just quickly touch on Pennsylvania and California. Pennsylvania, as some of you may know, has recently said that if you are an out-of-state retailer and you've got a marketing affiliate in the state, you are a retailer who uses, for example, Amazon's marketplace and uses their FBA services, their fulfillment by Amazon services, and you have equipment and property, I'm sorry, if you have goods and items sitting in one of their warehouses that they're going to package and ship for you, you are required to register with the Pennsylvania Department of Revenue and start collecting Pennsylvania's sales tax. One of the things that's really pertinent about this particular development is that Pennsylvania didn't enact any type of law. They basically said, you know what? Our interpretation of the law as it reads already is that if you're doing these various activities, you have nexus to our state. So this is a pretty recent development. Some of you may or may not know about it, but if you're using FBA, guess what? You may be required to start collecting Pennsylvania sales tax. Another big development, just wanted to touch on this, California, probably one of the largest, biggest Amazon developments of current time. As many of you may know, many online retailers are now required to start collecting and remitting sales tax in California. This was a law that was actually based on a law that was actually enacted last summer, but there was all this brouhaha that went on. You know, Amazon got all crazy, went after a voter referendum, negotiated with the state. The law was eventually repealed, and repealed for basically at least a year, and that has just come into place now too. So very big development here recently with all the developments that surrounded the California Amazon law. Okay, just very quickly, very quick slide here. States that have some form of Amazon law, what year they've enacted them. More and more states are taking an aggressive position and saying, hey, you know, we need that money. We're going to enact the law. Okay, so as I said a minute ago, states are hungry for revenue, and more and more states are, introducing legislation, passing some form of Amazon law because, again, they're hungry for revenue. You know, Quill is still the law of the land. Congress has refused to act. So what's the solution? Okay, solution is the federal government introducing proposals that would essentially require out-of-state retailers to start collecting sales tax if certain requirements are met. We're going to talk about that. We're going to segue into that now. So I said a little while ago that there are three federal proposals that have been introduced in the current 112th U.S. Congress. Never before in the history of any Congress have we had three separate federal proposals introduced that would specifically allow states to require out-of-state retailers to collect their sales tax. So as Melissa said in her introduction, just a lot going on with this. There's a big push for this now. States, as I just talked about, are hungry for the revenue. You know, these Amazon laws are getting passed. You know, sometimes they're getting, temporarily repealed. There's just so much going on that basically this big push for the federal government to really take some action, and that's exactly what has happened. So just to kind of start with three proposals, there was a proposal. The first proposal was introduced last summer, and that proposal goes by the name of the Main Street Fairness Act. It's actually two proposals. It's Senate Bill 1452 and House Bill 2701. It was introduced last July, not this July that just passed, but last July. The main premise of this particular proposal is that states that are full members of something called the Streamlined Sales and Use Tax Agreement, and we're going to talk about what that means in a few minutes, but states that are full members of the Streamlined Sales and Use Tax Agreement would have authority, power to require out-of-state retailers to collect their sales tax. One thing about this first proposal that was introduced, it really never went very far. One of the reasons was because it was only a Democratic supported bill, never really drew a lot of bipartisan support. But it is a proposal that is sitting out there, and it was the first of the three proposals that was introduced. Here we were thinking a year ago, hey, we've got Main Street Fairness Act, something's going to happen. Lo and behold, 2 months later, we had a second proposal introduced. This proposal is called the Marketplace Equity Act, and it's House Bill 3179. This proposal was introduced last October, almost a year ago, October 12, 2011. This particular proposal, different from the first proposal for a couple of different reasons. One thing is it has bipartisan support. Both the Democrats and Republicans said, hey, you know, we're going to support this particular bill. But one of the most significant differences between the second proposal, the Marketplace Equity Act, and the first proposal is that this proposal, even though it has the same goal, it's going to empower states to force out-of-state retailers to collect their sales tax. It's got the same goal as the Main Street Fairness Act. One very significant difference is that the Marketplace Equity Act has absolutely nothing to do with that Streamlined Sales and Use Tax Agreement that I just talked about. In other words, if a state is a member of a streamlined sales and use tax agreement. This particular proposal doesn't care. This proposal says, you know what, we're not going to have anything to do with the streamlined sales and use tax agreement. We're going to come up with our own requirements that states need to fulfill in order to have that power to require out-of-state retailers to collect our sales tax. So that was the second proposal, okay? Here we were, two proposals. That's never happened before. And then what happens? A month later, on November the 9th of 2011, we have a third proposal introduced, and that is the Marketplace Fairness Act, Senate Bill 1832. And I got to tell you, you would have thought that some of these sponsors would have come up with a different name. You know, we've got the Main Street Fairness Act. We've got the Marketplace Equity Act. We've got the Marketplace Fairness Act. You would have thought that would have been a little bit more creative. But anyway, at the end of the day, we have a third proposal, and it's called the Marketplace Fairness Act, introduced last November. One of the key differences between this proposal and the two prior proposals, this proposal also has bipartisan support, just like the Marketplace Equity Act, the second proposal. But one of the key differences in this particular proposal is that it gives states two options that they can follow in order for them to obtain the authority to require out-of-state retailers to collect their sales tax. This proposal, you probably heard, is the most flexible. And the reason why it's the most flexible is because, like the Main Street Fairness Act, it says that if a state is already a full member of something called the Streamlined Sales and Use Tax Agreement, guess what? That state has already fulfilled many of the requirements that they need to fulfill in order to require out-of-state retailers to collect their sales tax. But this proposal also said, wait a minute, every state is not a full member Streamlined Sales and Use Tax Agreement state today. Every state may not want to become a member of the Streamlined Sales and Use Tax Agreement. So we are going to include in our proposal a separate set of requirements that a state can meet in order for that state to be able to require out-of-state retailers to collect their sales tax. So this particular proposal is most certainly the most comprehensive in the sense that, you know, it gives two states two ways that they can basically obtain this authority, this power that I keep talking about. All right, let's talk about the Streamlined Sales and Use Tax Agreement. You've heard that term, probably. I'm sure you've heard that term. Some of you may even be based in a Streamlined Sales and Use Tax Agreement state. One of the things I wanted to clarify, and I wanted to make sure that I address this, is because every so often I'll look at an article and it'll talk about there's 44 states in the Streamlined Sales and Use Tax Agreement, so on and so forth. No, there is not 44 states that are members of the Streamlined Sales and Use Tax Agreement today. You know, what the Streamlined Sales and Use Tax Agreement is, it's a comprehensive multi-state agreement that was originally designed through a cooperative effort of 44 states and the District of Columbia, so local governments and the business community, to simplify sales and use tax collection administration. This particular effort is called the Streamlined Sales Tax Project. And this effort, okay, this effort was actually a response to that Kuhl decision. So when Kuhl came forward and basically said, you know, all state retailer has to have a physical presence in the state, that's how we define substantial nexus to a state, states kind of came together, this effort came together and said, we need to find a way that we can simplify sales and use tax administration, a set of rules, a set of guidelines, so that it will make it easier for out-of-state retailers to want to collect sales tax in our states. I said a minute ago, the effort itself is called the Streamlined Sales Tax Project. There is a governing board that oversees the workings of this project, and that is known as the Streamlined Sales and Use Tax Governing Board. So when you see something about Streamlined Sales Tax, you know that it is an effort, it's a group, it's a project that's come together to basically simplify sales and use tax, sales and use tax administration. Okay, continuing on with Streamlined Sales Tax, when I talked about the Main Street Fairness Act, the first of the three proposals, and I talked about the Marketplace Fairness Act, the third of the three proposals, I talked about how states that are full members of the Streamlined Sales and Use Tax Agreement will have authority under these two proposals to require out-of-state retailers to collect their sales tax. And so I thought it'd be good for you guys to know which states are full member Streamlined Sales and Use Tax Agreement states. And here's a listing of them. Arkansas, Georgia, Indiana, Iowa, Kansas, Kentucky, Michigan, Minnesota, Nebraska, Nevada, New Jersey, North Carolina, North Dakota, Oklahoma, Rhode Island, South Dakota, Vermont, Utah will become a full member state on October the 1st, Washington State, West Virginia, Wisconsin, and Wyoming, okay? Why is this important? Why is it important to know about these states? As I said a minute ago, under the Marketplace Fairness Act, the third proposal, and the Main Street Fairness Act, the first proposal, if a state is a full member streamlined sales and use tax state, they will essentially already have the authority to require out-of-state sellers to collect sales tax on sales made to customers in their state. Here's why this is important again. If you are an out-of-state seller, an online seller, and you're selling into any of these states that I just mentioned a minute ago that are listed up here, and let's say, for example, that the Marketplace Fairness Act passes, guess what? You may very possibly have to start collecting sales tax in those particular states. That's the emphasis. That's the point. You know, when it comes to the federal proposals, unlike the state Amazon laws, which look at what a company is doing in another state, what's their nexus to another state, the federal proposals really look at which states are members of the Streamlined Sales and Use Tax Agreement, for example, or which states have complied with what the federal law says they need to do. It's not so important what the company is doing in that state, what a seller is doing in that state. What's important is what particular states have done to comply with the requirements of whichever proposal passes in order for them to have this authority that I keep talking about. Okay, very quickly, collection authority. I keep talking about this authority, so let's very quickly talk about it. Collection authority, you will hear that term thrown around a lot, okay? I mean, collection authority, just to kind of reemphasize what I've sort of been saying here in the last couple of slides, it's the authority that states will obtain under one of these proposals to require out-of-state retailers to collect and remit that state sales tax. Couple of points here. I think I've just mentioned them. Nexus is not so important anymore. It's really what states are doing. But what's important here too is that states do have to take action. Sometimes you'll hear about the federal proposals being referred to as almost like a national sales tax, sort of like this blanket, you know, approval that's going to be given to states. No, that's really not the case. States do have to take action. Okay, so moving on with the proposals here. Once again, I feel like I apologize for repeating myself, but again, states do need to take action. So the next few slides I'm going to go through, you know, very quickly. I have them in there because I do want you to realize that, again, states really do need to take action in order to have this collection authority that I've been talking about, and that is really important. Again, we're going to go through them really quick, and I just sort of wanted to reemphasize that there are things that states need to do. Okay, very quickly, under the Main Street Fairness Act, you know, states essentially have to be in compliance with the requirements of the Streamlined Sales and Use Tax Agreement. We talked a little bit about that already. If you're a full member Streamlined Sales and Use Tax Agreement, then you will have basically collection authority under the Main Street Fairness Act. Under the Marketplace Equity Act, remember, that's the second proposal that I talked about, and that's the proposal that I said does not have anything to do with the Streamlined Sales and Use Tax Agreement. So when the sponsors of this particular proposal came forward and created this proposal, they realized that they also needed to implement requirements that states would need to comply with in order to have this collection authority. You know, very quickly, there's a few things that they need to do. There needs to be a kind of a centralized collection authority. They can't discriminate against out-of-state internet retailers. There's a lot of things that need to happen. And so I guess the point of this slide, and let's move forward on more here. Some of these slides here are really just slides to talk about what the states need to do under the Marketplace Equity Act. And my point here with these particular slides, and I know I'm going through them rather quickly, is that these are the actions that states need to take. Again, emphasizing that under the federal proposals, states do need to take action. And under the Marketplace Equity Act, these are some of the steps that states need to take in order to have this collection authority. Okay. One of the things we're going to talk about here in just a minute is that under all of the proposals, one of the requirements is that states have to include what is known as a small seller exception. And you're probably sitting here saying, wait a minute, isn't there some kind of small seller exception? Maybe I'm small enough to qualify for that small seller exception and not have to collect sales tax. Well, that is the case, and we are going to talk about that here in a few minutes. Moving along, Marketplace Fairness Act. Again, there's things that states need to do. And I'm just very quickly going through these slides, folks, and the purpose, again, is just to sort of emphasize things that states need to do under the two proposals, under all three of the proposals. This one is the Marketplace Fairness Act. And just moving on there, trying to keep things on schedule. Okay, and here we go. I said a minute ago that we are going to talk about a small seller exception. Some of you are saying, hey, wait a minute, I think I might be a small seller. So it's time for another polling question. All three proposals have a small seller exception. So before continuing, I really just want to get everybody's opinion, okay? If you were devising a small seller exception under these proposals, what do you think it should be? So here's various choices. Remote sellers, remote, by the way, is another term for out of state. Remote sellers with gross revenues of $500,000 or less should be exempt from collecting sales tax in states with collection authority. Those are the states that have taken those actions that I've been talking about. How about remote sellers with gross revenues of $1 million or less should be exempt? Third option, hey, $500,000 or $1 million small seller exception is much too low. That's insane. That's not a big revenue number. And, you might have a completely different opinion. You might say, hey, there should be no small seller exception. Small brick and mortar companies have to collect from the first dollar collected, first dollar sales. So why should any online retailer, no matter how small they are, have to be exempt from collecting? Okay, results are coming in. Okay, consensus here. All right. And as you can see, the results, a great majority of you are saying, hey, $500,000 or $1 million, really much too low. That is absolutely insane. Okay. So coming into the wrap-up here, talking a little bit about the small seller exceptions themselves. I said a little while ago that the Main Street Fairness Act, the first proposal, and the Marketplace Fairness Act, the third proposal, look to the Streamlined Sales and Use Tax Agreement. So states that obtain collection authority because they are full members of the Streamlined Sales and Use Tax Agreement would use the small seller definition that it's in the Streamlined Sales and Use Tax Agreement, that multi-state comprehensive document that I talked about a little while ago. If you are a state that again, has collection authority because you are a full member of the Streamlined Sales and Use Tax Agreement, you use the definition of the Streamlined Sales and Use Tax Agreement, which is essentially $500,000 or less. If you're a retailer with $500,000 or less in revenues, you are exempt from collecting in those Streamlined Sales and Use Tax Agreement states, okay? Not in every state, but in those particular states. Under the Marketplace Equity Act, okay, that's the second proposal, the proposal that does not look to the Streamlined Sales and Use Tax Agreement. That proposal says that if you are an out-of-state retailer and your gross revenues, your U.S. gross receipts are $1 million or less, you would be exempt from collecting in a state that meets the requirements under the Marketplace Equity Act for collection authority. This particular proposal is actually a little bit more flexible than the other two because not only does it say that if you have $1 million or less in sales that you would be exempt from collecting in those particular states with state-specific exemption, which is $100,000 or less. So, for example, if you're an out-of-state retailer with more than $1 million of sales, but yet you're only making less than $100,000 of sales into a particular state and the state has chosen to use the state-specific exemption, you would be exempt in that particular state. The other flexible point of this particular proposal is that it gives states, it's not a specific limit, states can actually impose a larger, higher small seller exception. So a state might actually say, hey, we've chosen to exempt retailers that have less than 2 million of sales or less than 5 million of sales. So under the Marketplace Equity Act, Marketplace Equity Act actually has probably the most flexibility in terms of defining what a small seller is. Coming into the wrap up here, small seller exceptions here, Marketplace Fairness Act, it looks both to the Streamlined Sales and Use Tax Agreement. It also has an alternative set of requirements which also use the $500,000 or less. They're essentially the same. And very quickly, just a summary here, a nice little table for you guys to look at, summarizes the three proposals, a small seller exception under the three. Okay, in the wrap-up here, key points. The Main Street Fairness Act. I told you the names of these proposals are too similar. The Main Street Fairness Act, the first proposal introduced over a year ago, permanently stalled. It is not a serious contender to pass this year. The second proposal, the Marketplace Equity Act and the Marketplace Fairness Act, the third proposal, are serious contenders to pass. Some people believe that the Marketplace Fairness Act has the best chance of passing, and I talked about that a little while ago because it offers states two alternatives, two sets of rules that they can abide by to get that collection authority that I talked about. But other people actually think that's a negative. There are people who think that the Marketplace Equity Act is the better proposal because they believe that a board such as the Streamlined Sales and Use Tax Governing Board, a non-elected, non-legislative body, should not be given authority to make rules that states need to comply with. Keep in mind, as I said, these are not a national solution. It's not a national sales tax. States really do need to take action in order to obtain this collection authority. All right. Final question here is, do you believe federal remote seller proposals such as the ones that we've discussed today will pass this year? And a couple of choices. Something will pass in 2012. Something will pass in 2013. Okay, it may not happen this year, but the momentum is high. Wheels have been set in motion. Something will happen in a later year, or it will never happen. It will never, ever happen. Okay, great majority of you here are responding, and we are all just about there. 60% of you. Something may happen next year. I think people realize that, yes, the momentum is very high. Okay, we're just going to pass over the last few slides here, and I'm going to pass this on to WebNow.
Thanks, Sylvia. Really appreciate you giving the overview there. You know, some of the things that Sylvia was discussing, we're definitely seeing play out for many of our customers. The reality is that today people are already looking for a solution to deal with the complexity of sales tax already in their business. If any of this legislation passes, the complexity is just going to increase, and a lot of people are trying to think about how can they be prepared. So what are the things that people need to look for when they're trying to go and find the right sales tax solution? Five key points here. First off, and I think most importantly, is make sure you look for an implementation that does not resemble a science project. You want something that's going to be fast and easy to implement. The reality is that today there's so much ease and flexibility in being able to switch between your e-com systems, switch between accounting systems, and the complexity of setting up new environments, as that's dramatically been reduced, it's important that when you're looking for a sales tax time to go live with it, the things you can look for to make sure that that's the reality is looking for a pre-built connector, something that is as close to possible as a click-to-activate environment. And then the other benefit you get is because of the ease of being able to change between systems, is you get a consistent solution that will work across many different accounting platforms and many different e-commerce shopping carts. Secondly, it's really important that you look for something that has rooftop-level accuracy. Some of what Sylvia was describing, if you really get down under the covers, the reality is that sales tax rates can be different on opposite sides of the street. Your neighbor's sales tax rate could be different. And so when you're looking at a vendor, make sure you're asking to actually see their map. Ask for a map that proves that they have a firm understanding down to a latitude-longitude level of the tax jurisdictional boundaries that will be applicable for any of your destination or origin-based sales tax states. One of the other little things you can look for in here, too, is also look for a provider that's got address validation baked into that process. It's a nice feature and benefit that you can find from a sales tax provider, and it's also critical that in helping make sure that you're getting the exact point correct on the map of the applicable sales tax jurisdiction. Third, and maybe my favorite, is make sure you're looking for an automated return solution where there are not monkeys running around in the background. You want a provider that can give you automation on the returns and filing process. Many providers will try to give you signature-ready returns and make you still responsible for, in some antiquated states, filling out the paper form and filing the check yourself. This is only part of the challenge. Look for a provider who has scale and is already processing and filing on behalf of their clients billions of dollars in remittances. Fourth, be looking for a cloud solution. The big benefit in SaaS available in cloud-based technologies today is that you don't have to go through the manual rate table update anymore. Also, many of the providers out there have product taxability that they can take into account. So across all different types of retail, in various states and in various jurisdictions, there can be very odd rules with specific thresholds based on the dollar value of items that are being sold or the quantity of items being sold, where the tax rate can change. Make sure you're looking for a provider that as your business expands into new product categories or already covers and handles the specific taxability for the products that you already sell. And then also, fifth, always thinking about pricing. Look for a value provider that is giving you subscription-based pricing, and specifically subscription-based pricing for your shopping cart where you are only being charged when your shopping cart is being completed, when you are registering a sale and generating revenue, and that's the only time that you're being charged for for getting the correct sales tax calculation correct. And one of the other things, just as a final note I'd like to mention, is that you should really be aware of free solutions. We found that many providers in the market have something where they will advertise something being free, but as we all know, there's always a catch, and if there's not, then you're really getting what you pay for. I would encourage everybody, when you're downloading the slides after the presentation, use these questions here to go back to your vendors as you're thinking about making a vendor decision and ask them these questions so you can quickly figure out who are high-quality providers and who are the guys, as there are actually in this industry, that are running their business out of a garage and even have a full-time day job separate from a sales tax solution that they're trying to sell to you. Just one slide on Avalara. Avalara is absolutely the leader in web-based transactional tax. We have more than 10,000 businesses today that have chosen us to be their solution for even the most complicated tax environments. We have extremely flexible pricing, and we're already prepared to handle all the tax challenges you might face today, and any of the tax challenges that might be presented with any of this new legislation that is coming. Melissa, I'll hand it back over to you.
Perfect. Thank you so much. Thanks so much to Webb and Sylvia for a great presentation. I know that there is a lot of information that was sort of discussed here, so I just want to remind everybody that all attendees can download the slides, and you'll get some information about that when we end the presentation. We also have a lot of questions, so I also just want to say up front that Sylvia has kindly said that she would answer questions, offline if we can't get to all the questions here. So I'm just going to kind of go in order here, and we'll go from there. So let's see, Sylvia. One of the first questions we got earlier was about Canada, and what about Canadian and other e-tailers based outside of the USA? Are they required to collect taxes for purchases made by US-based companies, individuals, or is that an area that you cover or that you're aware of?
Well, it comes down to, Melissa, again, if the state that has an Amazon law, and they have nexus to that state. Depending on what the out-of-state, out-of-country, retailer is doing. So out-of-state retailers are going to be subject to these state requirements, these federal and state laws, if they meet the requirements to be subject to sales tax collection. So, yes, international sellers could also be subject to some of the collection requirements in the U.S. states.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Would you like to, and I'm looking at the, let me ask Melissa, I'm looking at the list of questions now. Would you like me just, and I can see several that I can answer pretty quickly. Would you like me to just go ahead and answer them quickly?
Yeah, that would be great. Actually, yeah, because there are a lot here. So.
Said, one of the slides, you all will be able to download the slides, and I do have all of my contact information, and I'm very open to receiving follow-up questions and answering those questions, so please do not hesitate to do that. First, one of the questions was if the $500,000 gross sales threshold for the small seller exception is based on sales to a particular state or total gross sales, that's total gross sales. As I mentioned in one of the slides, as an internet seller, do I have to collect tax in states where I don't have nexus? No, you do not. Once again, if you are an out-of-state seller selling into a state and you do not have nexus to that state, however, keep in mind that there are many unobvious activities that create nexus. But if you truly do not have nexus to that state, under current law, you are not required to collect sales tax. If a federal proposal passes, guess what? Nexus does not matter anymore. You may have to collect in certain states. Let's see. For the question on revenues for small sellers, is the revenue for a single state or total revenue for the entire company? With the small seller exceptions, other than the Marketplace Equity Act, which allows states to define their own small seller exception for that state, you're really talking about total sales for the company, which once again, when you think about it, $500,000 or $1 million threshold is not a lot of money. A retailer making $500,000 in sales may not be netting a huge profit. What action, I think this one may be for Webb. What action does an online retailer need to take now? I don't know if you want to take that question.
Yeah, well, Sylvia, we see a lot of people already going and talking to their trusted advisors on sales and use tax issues like you and other professional providers to ask that question. People are right now evaluating whether or not the Amazon laws and the changes there where the states are being much more aggressive about what gives you nexus inside a state, those things are already happening. And there's a lot of companies out there that we come across that are probably already running the risk of not being compliant today, where you may even be required to do a voluntary disclosure to get compliant in advance of any of these laws ever passing. So that's something that you should probably think about doing today. And then the other thing you can do is also think about putting a process in place that's going to automate away you need to know and keep track of a lot of these rule changes for product taxability, for when a new state expands its nexus rules. If you find the right sales tax solution, you should be able to automate away a lot of you needing to keep up to date with all these rules and regulation changes.
Excellent. And Webb, you bring up a great point with the voluntary disclosure. Just very quickly, voluntary disclosure is a method, a program that virtually every state has, which allows companies who discover that they should have been collecting but didn't collect, so they've got exposure, what you call exposure. The state discovers them. The state can come after them and assess them, the uncollected tax, interest penalties. Virtually every state has a program in place which allows taxpayers to come forward anonymously through a taxpayer representative and disclose these prior period liabilities and do it under some very favorable terms. So certainly that's something, in addition to evaluating where they have nexus, also evaluating whether a voluntary disclosure agreement makes sense for them, as well as evaluating, looking at the various, sales tax solutions that are available out there, specifically Avalara's wonderful solution, to help them be in compliance on a go-forward basis. So there's many things companies could be doing even right now before any type of federal legislation passes. Kind of moving forward on some of these other questions that I think may be directed towards me. Let's see. If one of the federal proposals passes, won't there be a grace period before the collection authority is allowed? And, yes, that's one of the things I talked about. States have to take action. States have to implement procedures, and states have to give have to put out various notifications. They need to enact state legislation that says that they are enacting or implementing the federal rules. There's a lot of things that have to happen. So, yes, online retailers will have notification of what's going on in the various states. So that is definitely the case. There is a call it specifically a set grace period, but things have to happen is my point. Let's see. In an organization that is an online retailer, no brick and mortar storefront, who within the organization do you think is the most obvious owner of figuring out all of this stuff? Well, as I tell you, as a consultant, you know, I deal with people on the corporate side, you know, all the time advising them some of the Nexus studies and voluntary disclosure. That's some of the type of work that I do. And it just really depends, you know, with the company. Sometimes you'll see the sales tax function within the tax department, within the corporate tax department. Sometimes it's, you know, finance and accounting that has responsibility for that. So, and I think, well, what do you think? You probably deal with a lot of people on the corporate side, right?
We run into a lot of people where this ultimately ends up being the responsibility of somebody underneath the CFO, you know, your VP of finance. Somebody in that department typically ends up doing it. In a much smaller business, some of these businesses that would be well below, you know, the thresholds we're talking about, it could be the front office manager in many situations also. Mm-hmm. You know, the reality is that you can eliminate a lot of the time you need to spend on thinking about this or being an expert and an owner inside the business on it if you get the right external solution.
Okay, excellent. Here's another question. With all of these acts, which state gets the sales tax, the state of the buyer or the state of the seller or both? In general, sales tax is a destination-based sales tax. It is the destination of where that product is going. So basically, it is the state of the purchaser that gets the sales tax. As a matter of fact, that's kind of one of the big you know, issues for online retailers. If you're a brick-and-mortar store, you're collecting sales tax for your physical location. The sales tax rate that's in effect in your particular, you know, town, city, state, you're collecting at that rate. If you're an out-of-state online retailer and you're shipping to customers all over the country, guess what? And you have Nexus or one of the federal proposals, passes, et cetera, guess what? You have to collect from those customers at those particular rates that are in effect where those customers are located. So in general, sales tax is a destination-based tax. Let's see. Somebody says, are the laws passed? Well, many of the state Amazon laws, yes, have passed. The federal proposals are currently under consideration by the U.S. Congress. None of them have passed. You know, there are people who think that they may pass this year. There are people who think it'll happen next year. I read something just today about that it's going to be, they're talking about pushing this as kind of some type like fiscal cliff legislation, and that happens sometimes. I mean, you know, legislators will find a way to get things passed. I'm sorry, there may have been a few questions I passed over. I'm trying to go through them as quickly as I can. Any more that you see there that you can answer, Webb?
You know, I saw one in here, Sylvia, that I think I know the answer to, but you might be able to help me out on. When you were talking about the Amazon laws in Pennsylvania, you'd mentioned that the Amazon marketplace and using the FBNA fulfillment were all things that might be able to trigger you now having to collect the Pennsylvania tax.
Mm-hmm.
My belief is that if you use any services that are actually even similar to that, it's not specifically Amazon services, but if you use services similar to that from any companies providing that, then that obligation is going to apply to you. Is that right, Sylvia?
Yes, that's right. That is exactly right. And I think I may be looking. This is a question about the e-tailer in New York City. Okay, this one is the e-tailer is in New York City. The inventory is in Pennsylvania at a third-party warehouse, and the customer is in California. Do I need to charge the 6% Pennsylvania tax or the California tax? Well, it's a destination-based tax. So the product is going to your customer in California. So you are collecting the California tax. Now, really, if you had inventory in Pennsylvania and any of that inventory is going to a Pennsylvania customer, then you would be collecting the Pennsylvania tax. So the fact that you've got inventory in the Pennsylvania warehouse is giving you nexus to that state according to this new bulletin that the Pennsylvania Department of Revenue put out. You have a requirement to register with Pennsylvania. Do you have a requirement to register with California? That kind of depends. But if you're shipping to California, your customer is in California, then you are required to collect, or you would be required to collect the California sales tax if you have nexus to California. Let's see. As an internet seller, do I have to collect tax in the states where I don't have nexus? No, once again, if you do not have nexus to a particular state, but keep in mind there are many activities, many less than obvious activities that create nexus using marketing affiliates, having your product in a warehouse. If you're using Amazon Fulfillment by Amazon and you've got your product in an Amazon warehouse in a particular state, guess what? You have nexus to that particular state. You don't have nexus to a particular state, then you do not have a requirement to register and collect that state sales tax. Again, keep in mind, it's very easy to have nexus nowadays, with states becoming more and more aggressive, taking aggressive positions and enacting Amazon law. The one that we missed here.
We probably only have about a minute left, maybe one more question.
We're sort of going through them here. For the question on revenues for small sellers, is the revenue for a single state or total revenue for the entire company? When it comes to the small seller exceptions under the federal proposals, in general, you know, they're talking about total U.S. sales by the company, you know, everywhere. So, for example, under the Streamlined Sales and Use Tax Agreement, it's $500,000 or less total U.S. sales within the 12 preceding months. So that's total sales. And again, you know, that's not a very large figure. If you're an online retailer with $500,000 in sales, you may not be making a large profit. You may be operating at a loss. It's not a very big small seller exception.
Right.
Let me just point out.
Go on. You can finish.
Okay, just very quickly. eBay is one of the big opponents to the federal online legislation that's floating around out there. You know, their belief is that the small seller exceptions under all of these proposals is way, way too low. eBay basically has pointed out that the Small Business Administration defines a small e-commerce shopping entity as having revenues of $30 million or less. Obviously, these proposals don't even come close to that.
Okay, great. I'm going to have to end it here. A few questions probably were not answered, and actually some have just come in. So as I said earlier, Sylvia and Webb would be happy to answer these questions offline. But in the meantime, I just want to thank on behalf of Avalara and our wonderful speaker, Sylvia Dion, and on behalf of Retail Online Integration, I want to thank everyone for attending today's webinar. Be sure to check out our webinar page to get information on all of our archived and upcoming webinars. And also please take a minute to fill out the feedback survey that will appear on your screen next. We would be very grateful. And your feedback will influence the webinars we bring you in the future. So I hope to see you at the next Retail Online Integration webinar. Thanks, everybody.